Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones. Bowden.
He's got it.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket, featuring their three great England performances. But no England is going to be featuring in this programme today, because we're going to be talking domestic cricket. We're going to be talking about the new tournament, the 100, which is finally here. It starts on Wednesday, the 21st of July, with a women's match first at the Oval, and then followed by a men's match on Thursday. And it has sort of polarised opinion, a lot of traditional fans feeling very irate about the 100. But we're going to try and take a considered view about it today, with actually some of our virtual cricket club members who are going to give us their view of what they think of the 100. And also we've got Catherine Brunt, who of course is going to be playing for the Trent Rockets, and also Chris Jordan, who's going to be playing for the Southern Brave. They're going to give their views and their take on the 100 as well in this show. What about you, Simon? What's your take?
Well, I always like to think, as you said, we're going to take a considered view, Yoz. I always like to think we take a considered view on the Analyst Inside Cricket. I've actually written a list of pros and antis, just to try to sort of get my sort of head around it. You know, some of the pros in favour of the 100 and some of the arguments against it. I mean, you can hear my list if you want, but we'll discuss some of the aspects of the 100 coming up. I think basically never have so many words been spoken about something that hasn't happened before. There's been so much talk about the 100. There's been this huge vacuum for so long in which, you know, so much criticism has flowed, and also there's been, you know, some positivity as well. So it I think it's time to see what it's like and then make a judgment. I don't want to prejudge it. I want to see what it's like, see what happens, see what the crowds are like, see what the TV viewing figures are like, see what the cricket is like, and then form an opinion about the 100. I suppose the one thing you would say about this year is that some of the star players are not here because of COVID, and that is a shame. It is a big shame. You know, if you had some of the, you know, a lot of the top players here, it would give it a bit more oomph, but we've got what we've got. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what it's like over the next month. I'm looking forward to the tongue twister opener between the Invincibles and the Originals. Not an easy one for the commentators, that one. Oval Invincibles.
It sounds like a Motown band, that.
Yeah. Well, the Invincibles against the Originals.
Certainly the Originals does, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, it all starts on Wednesday. And we were talking about this in the Virtual Cricket Club on Monday night. We had Chris Jordan as our guest. We had Catherine Brunt as our guest. Both very interesting. We'll hear from those, from both of those in a short while. But we also got the mood from our Virtual Cricket Club members to see how they felt about it. And I think actually we were a little bit surprised that there was a bit more positivity about it than we expected.
I'm Jack. I'm from London.
I think the 100 is a good idea. I'm really, really excited about it, because the way that cricket was and is, if it just carries on like it is, then it will not survive the new media age. And I think it's really innovative. I think it's going to be really exciting. It will have teething problems, but we've got to hope that the 100 lasts an awfully long time. And in 10, 15 years, it will look different to what it does on Wednesday and Thursday. But I think that's only a good thing, because games evolve and games change. And I think it's just simply going to complement all the other great cricket that fans can enjoy.
I'm Alex Gaywood. I'm living in Huddersfield. In my opinion, I understand why the ECB wants to have this big, extravagant tournament with all the big names and all the big stars to bring in the new fans. I'm not convinced by the slight tweaks to the game and why they've got such a small differentiation between T20 and the 100 and why that has to happen. But at the same time, I'm going to try and be open-minded. I'll definitely watch the first game and judge it how it goes from there.
I'm Mark Lewis from Carmarthen, West Wales. I'm really looking forward to the 100, I'll be honest. I've been looking forward to it since last year. I think it's a new way of looking at cricket. Cricket needs some injection, I think, especially in Wales, I believe. And it's nice to see some big stars coming to Cardiff and get the occasional one coming to Sapphire Gardens. But it's something fresh and something new. I think more kids will be involved as well. I think it'll be a good thing.
I'm Paul. I'm from Hampton, Southwest London. I am cautiously optimistic about the 100. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to going. I'm going on Sunday to watch London Spirit versus Oval Invincible. So keen to sense the atmosphere and see what it's all about. I think the only message I would have for anyone out there who's sceptical is I think innovation is important. I think anyone who is sceptical, please don't will it to fail. I think those of us who are excited by it, similarly, don't be blind to its failings. So the jury's still out to a degree, but I hope it's successful.
Hi, I'm Rob from Fairlight. I'm 50-50 on the 100. I'm a bit worried about the impact if COVID hits and they've got to redraft players in and it lessens the one-day cup. Maybe it could have been postponed another year to get more influx of the overseas that were originally there, but I think it will be good to see how it works, and hopefully next year they'll have the more input from overseas, especially from the female side, because there's no Australians over, and you know that would have a big impact on the 100 for the ladies.
Hi, my name's Nortz. I'm from Weston-super-Mare. I am totally looking forward to the 100. I love the fact that the women's game is getting the equality with the men's, about time too. But more than anything, I'm looking forward to that day. I think it's July the 29th when Owen Morgan comes face to face with Alex Hales. Oh, to be listening to that stump camera.
So relatively positive, actually, I would say, has been the overall view of the Virtual Cricket Club, certainly the members who were on the show on Monday night. And it's quite a cross-section, admittedly all male, but quite a range of ages, from, I'd say, the early 20s to mid to late 50s, and also quite a regional spread as well. A couple of Yorkshiremen, a Welshman, a couple of Londoners, somebody from Weston-super-Mare. So, you know, we've got the full spread of the country as well. And I felt relatively positive, actually.
Mm. I mean, one thing about the West Country, I think, I mean, there are pockets of the country that they feel as if they've been left out. And I think the West Country feels that. I mean, Somerset's got a very sort of strong cricket tradition, and their county is thriving. And do they feel left out? Did they want it to happen in the first place? I mean, that is one thing. But also, that is one area of the country that has been a little bit neglected. You know, the Gloucestershire Somerset area around there. You know, the southwest. I mean, there is a team in the west, but it's in Cardiff. But there's not much allegiance between. Well, no, there's no allegiance between the West Country and Wales. In the same way, there wouldn't be if there'd been a West Country team and not a Welsh team. There wouldn't be any allegiance from the Welsh team to the West Country team. It's the way it works. And there are other pockets of the country as well that are a bit like that. I mean, I thought, you know, the pros seemed to me things like terrestrial coverage to expand the game's reach, more accessible format, which may help the game, money into the game. I mean, that, you know, obviously a lot of money has been spent, but the idea is to bring money into the game, women on an equal footing, and we'll talk about that with Catherine Brunt in a short while, new audience, and a ECB product to to sell, really, to help maintain the game if television rights for Test cricket decline. And that is a possibility, that they might not be worth as much. And that was one of the drivers behind it, yeah, for the ECB. In terms of ante, how strong is the support base? Who cares who wins? I mean, one of the really strong points about sport in this country has been, it has been a bit tribal, hasn't it? There have been those allegiances, and they've gone back a long way, and county cricket, football, whatever, rugby, the strong allegiances. Will anyone care on Wednesday whether the Oval Invincibles or the Manchester Originals win? I mean, how long will it take to build up that allegiance? Detracts from red ball cricket, which has been definitely pushed into the margins, hasn't it? The white ball cricket has won, whether that's just the 100 or other white ball cricket, you can debate that. It also, it challenges the county's preeminence as the main clubs in the country. I mean, that could be a pro or it could be an anti, actually, depending how you look at it. And I think one of the main things, it has definitely alienated some traditional cricket supporters who might be needed to help it along. I mean, there has been that sense of alienation, of not drawing cricket supporters along into it. And I think there are people who feel snubbed a little bit. No one was consulted. Exactly, no one's consulted. No one asked me, and they just went ahead with it. And it detracts what I love. And we support the game. We are the supporters of the game. We keep cricket going. I think there's that feeling has been there, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all of those. I think... overall, you mentioned the money part. That is obviously a key thing, with counties, most counties being in the red from year on year. And this is a way of getting more money into the game through broadcast rights, which are not reliant on internationals. And the trouble is that England are the most reliant country on generating broadcast revenue from international cricket. So this is a way of generating broadcast revenue from domestic cricket, which is very important for the sustainability of the game. I think, in a way, it's a sort of rebranding exercise. In a funny sort of way, the counties, you could almost affiliate with the public school network. I'm not saying they're working together, but it's almost like the sustainability of cricket in schools is from the public schools, and they feed their players into the club system and obviously into the county system. And state schools are sort of rather exempt or sort of ignored, or they don't even play cricket. So this is an attempt, I think, to try and draw state school children into cricket. They don't grow up with it. It's not sort of taught in their playgrounds and on their games fields, if they've got a games field. This is a way of presenting cricket in a slightly new way, which makes it look a bit more exciting. It doesn't assume a lot of knowledge. They're using some quite interesting creative coverage ideas, like avatars, and almost marrying or merging gaming with sport to try and draw in a younger audience. Because if you don't do that, then the game will struggle in 20 years' time. If you don't keep the younger generation interested in a sport, that sport will just wither away. You can't sustain it on people of our age group.
How do the avatars work? I saw the press release the other day, and I didn't fully understand it. Maybe because I'm, not...
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how it's going to be presented, but I know I was working on some scripts, actually, originally, for how this would work. And what you do is you attach detectors, sensors to a player's body, and then you do very fast still shooting with lots and lots of frames per second until you capture their movements in sort of still frame mode. And then you basically create an avatar out of that. And the whole idea of, in a way, avatars was to try and make them gender neutral. So I worked on quite a lot of scripts that described a particular shot played by someone who could have been a man or a woman, actually, with a helmet on and with, trousers and a sort of physique and so on, that you couldn't really tell whether it was a man or a woman. But trying to capture the essence of that player's technique or method, so they are quite recognisable. They're animations, in a way. What they're planning to do with them, I'm not sure, but they'll be presented on screen, they'll be presented on an app. You can then kind of use them and sort of basically using the modern sort of, social media ideas like Snapchat, you'll be able to create things like lenses to put on your head to make yourself look like that player. And I think that's kind of the concept behind it. So you can almost transpose or transport yourself into that player's skills.
Okay. Well, I think it's one of those wait and see and watch and see, really, and see how that works out. I mean, I still don't fully understand. I mean, I think you don't...
Well, we'll see. It'll become clearer, I guess,
exactly.
Over time. The other thing just to say about the tournament overall, which I like, is the fact that it's in a short block. It's in, I think, 32 days. It's over. And I think that's really important for the game. It's something that made the IPL very successful because it was a game on every single night. You knew what time it was on. You could follow the narrative every day as it unfolded, rather than there being some games on a Tuesday, some games on a Thursday and Friday, and it lasting sort of 8 weeks, and then the quarterfinals and finals are like 100 days later. I think that's a narrative much harder to follow. So, you know, that's a problem which has been solved by this short format tournament. And I mean, it's a shame for me that they don't play county championship cricket at the same time. You know, I looked up in 1985, I played for Middlesex and we lost Gatting, Downton, Embury and Edmonds to six test matches in the Ashes of 85. So they missed probably about 10 county games each and we won the championship, despite the fact that we were missing our four, you know, best players. So it shows that you can still perform in county cricket, even though you've lost a number of players to another tournament. In some cases, maybe a Sussex or, you know, one or two other counties might lose more than four or five to the 100. But in the main, you know, I think county cricket should have carried on at the same time. It wouldn't overlap because it would finish just about the time the 100 started. It would even be a nice little aperitif, actually. If you wanted a sort of 24/7 cricket experience, you could start watching a county championship match at 11 and still be watching a 100 game at 9. So, you know, that would be great. I mean, one thing that I thought was interesting to explore with both Catherine Brunt and Chris Jordan was this idea of creating new teams. And obviously the important thing is, will there be allegiances to these new teams? Some of the teams have a couple of core players from that area, you know, the likes of Ben Stokes, who's playing for the Northern team, for instance. So, you know, there are certain key players who will be part of a team that's in their area, a player who's from their area playing in that team. But I think what happened with the IPL was you got interested in individual players and followed their paths. And sometimes, especially with the younger generation, they're more interested in a particular individual than they are in a team. And that draws them into following that team.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's anathema, really. I mean, you grow up with an allegiance to a football team or a county, and you play it. The players come and go, but your allegiance stays to the club, to the team. That's how I've always viewed sport. So, for me, I don't fully understand that. I don't get that, but that's fair enough. You know, other people see it in a completely different way. I mean, and one thing about the block, you know, of playing it in 31 days, I agree. It's short, sharp, and actually, when the T20 first started, that's how, from memory, that's how it started in this country, how it was played.
Yes.
In there were fewer matches. I mean, one of the concerns might be that if it is a success, is that, you know, it's what happened in the Big Bash, it just gets expanded and then it just becomes another day, another game. Is there room for expansion into, say, 10 teams? I talked about, you know, one or two parts of the country that don't have a 100 team like the West Country. You know, is there the possibility of expanding, having 10 teams, but that will mean more games, will take longer, and it will lose that sort of short, sharp shock impact. Mm. Anyway, I know, for example, that Will Brown at Gloucestershire has talked about, you know, having a West Country team. We could sustain one, is what he, you know, he said in the past. Mm. So anyway, we'll see that. First things first, though. Let's see how it pans out. The weather, of course, is important as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very warm at the moment, but I mean, how long will that last?
True.
We don't know.
I mean, I'll just allay people's fears about the future of the county game by just saying that the county game is vital to the future of English cricket. Each county is, you know, an academy in itself, with all the arteries and tentacles that it spreads throughout that county, and all the pathways that you use to get into playing for that county from under 11s or even under 9s onwards, and all the coaches that are involved in that, and all the clubs that are connected to each county as well. So they are very much, each of them is a heartbeat that is important to the game. And then I think they all kind of, you know, form a pyramid that then creates this layer above, which is the 100. And people want to play in the 100 because they've starred for their county, and, you know, that will get them, you know, brownie points and, you know, recognition that enables them to be bought by one of the 100 teams. So it's almost like a thing to aim at. That isn't England. You know, not everyone can play for England. You know, England's still fairly limited in the number of players who get the opportunity to play at international level. This is a tier between international and county, which probably every county player would aspire to.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, it is changing the game. It has the potential, though, to change the game enormously. The focus of what's important in cricket and what people see as important in cricket. And clearly, red ball has been pushed to the margins of the season. And there's no doubt about that. And the England team, I don't know whether it's a coincidence or not, in the last few years, the quality of batting, the England team, the techniques, they seem all over the place. And if you're playing on pitches where the ball is seaming around the whole time, then it's very difficult to have that, I think, develop a really solid test match technique. So, you know, it could well be that they're going to be winners and losers. And the England team has been, you know, right up there. It's been world number one. It's had a great 21st century, really. I mean, they were really low ebb at the start of the 21st century, and they've been really solid for close on 20 years. But I don't know whether it's just beginning to just fall away a bit, and we'll see that, because they're going to be tested in the next 6 months by India at home and Australia away. And it'll be, if England get heavily beaten in both those two series, then it will be interesting to see the reaction and whether they'll be that kickback, come on, we need to do something about this, or we're not doing the right things for our red ball cricket. Anyway, that is at the heart of the debate about, you know, how much you focus on something like the 100 and you put it right at the heart of your summer. Of course, the other side of it is that incredible weekend we saw of you know, wonderful cricket, wonderful skills last weekend when England played Pakistan in those two T20 matches. Mm. I think we should hear from Catherine Brunt, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
It's high time we heard
from
Catherine.
Yes, and I think, you know, she's a traditionalist in many ways, isn't she? She's one of the older stages in the England women's team. She's been around, you know, for, it feels like donkey's years, actually, and still performing superbly in that 2-1 victory over the Indians, and general sort of superiority they showed in those various matches against the Indian women. And it was interesting to find out from her, actually, initially, how she viewed the 100 when she first heard about it.
I guess I was like everyone else, to be honest. I was a bit sceptical to sort of growing and evolving the game, because I guess we all like it as it is. And obviously, the shorter the format it gets, the more chaotic, the less kind of like cricket it becomes, because obviously, if we're talking about test cricket being the purest form, then it's, you know, it's nowhere near that kind of game. So I was kind of sceptical, but now I'm excited because I've played cricket for so long at this level. It's nice to sort of be refreshed, especially at my age, by something a bit different, a bit new, a bit exciting. And also body-wise, it'll be nice to have something done and dusted in a couple of hours.
You hope, although the stories of the women's practice games was that they were lasting over 3 hours.
Well, we'll see about that, because apparently, well, for a fact, you can say goodbye to a fielder in the last 5 overs, can't you, if you run over. So I'm not sure I'll be doing that.
That's one new rule. What are the others that people are sort of grappling with, do you think? I mean, what are the ones that you're sort of not quite sure about? The idea of a 10 ball over, for instance, a 10 ball spell?
I think in this weather at the minute, a 10 ball spell is not something I would like to be doing. You can probably think the batsmen are going to be cashing in on your 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th balls when you're blowing a bit. But there are some challenges, obviously, because people are going to play slightly different. So you can obviously prepare to how people are going to play, but with it being even shorter, people are probably going to be even more aggressive. And that's, you know, I think it's the chaos that we're going to be worried about, getting it wrong, flapping around and not quite knowing how to like bring yourself back. There's a lot of youngsters in this tournament and there'll be a lot of inexperience. So I think our jobs will be to sort of coach them and calm them through certain situations that will be, you know, heightened by being on TV, being in the media, being at, on first class grounds. You know, it'll be quite, it's overwhelming as it is. And then to add, you know, the pressure of what this, the pace of this game's going to be like, it's going to be crazy. So
one thing about it, Catherine, is you haven't had that much time to prepare, really. I mean, people are going from international cricket, both, you know, both the women's and the men, straight into the 100 because there isn't that much time in the calendar, really. It's all got to be squeezed in. I mean, it's interesting how you talk there. It does seem as if it's going to be, you're almost going to be learning on the job.
Definitely. I've said that line a few times, to be honest. I've witnessed and not been a part of one practice warm-up 100 game. And that didn't go great. There was, like I said, that overran a lot. A lot of people didn't do things that, looking back at the game, they would have done differently. So I think this one and only practice game on the day after tomorrow will be hugely important to how the rest of your season goes. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. But I think that'll be the main message for the public, is just be patient and let it evolve, because it is untested. I mean, it's obviously not a whole lot different from a T20, but it is, if you think about it. And we're talking small margins, and they're the biggest, can have the biggest impact. So, yeah.
One of the things I'm interested in is what do you think success will look like, or failure? What will success look like for the 100, for both the women and the men, do you think?
Personally, it would be how these youngsters and these fresh new cricketers come in, and how they conduct themselves and how they, you know, play and adapt to these kind of situations. If they can handle this tournament, they can handle playing for England, you know what I mean? And that'll be interesting to see the next generation, how they flourish and how they go about it. And then the next bit will be how it's taken by the public, whether people enjoy it and whether they prefer this, and whether this becomes more of a bigger thing, and we play more tournaments like this.
It feels like a sort of exploration, actually, which I always thought T20 was a bit as well. It's creating opportunities, not only in this case to play a slightly different style of, or slightly different format with one or two little tweaks, but also rebranding the game and, you know, sort of trying to create extra bits to it and using the game as a sort of vehicle to create an entertainment, really, which I know T20 does, but there are limitations because of the sort of traditional structure and format and the kind of the accessories with it. Whereas this feels like it's been an opportunity to experiment with the coverage, which I hope will be really, you know, interesting, and these avatars and things like that, that kind of just uses cricket as a vehicle to use technology and bring perhaps cricket and gaming almost closer together, which I should think will sort of fill people, some of the people in this club, with horror. But I think you have to keep innovating to, you know, to stay relevant, really, in the modern world.
It is crazy at the pace at which social media is working. Like the fact that people are earning ridiculous amounts of money just by taking selfies and 10-second videos of ridiculous things is strange and mind-blowing. But, and obviously with COVID, adding to the fact that this is now normal life, we're not in studios, we're not meeting and greeting, we are talking over our phones, our laptops, and so, like, we have to evolve, like you said. And in the last year, I think the rate of evolving has been huge, hasn't it? And so we have to move with it, and it has to start at some point. I think this journey to this 100 has been, you know, 3 to 4 years in the making, so it's actually been going on longer than we all thought. And now that it's here, we have to sort of embrace it and go with it, as much as some people don't want to. This could literally be the future of our game.
How well do you know all your teammates? I mean, do you know them? Do you know all of them well? Or you look at them, you think, who are you? I don't even know who you are.
So it's a funny one, actually. Like I know of most of them, but I literally, there was four people today, I don't have a clue who they were. and then half the coaching staff I didn't know or seen or heard of them before either. So it is a difficult one, obviously. It's my first training session tomorrow, and then the games the day after that. So it's real quick introductions and learnings. And that's why I think today went on so long, was because we tried to do some team building and some getting to know each other and things like that. I've played against Rachel Priest, who plays for New Zealand, for over a decade, but I've never had a conversation with her.
Really?
So I mean, there's lots of people around the world internationally that I have done that with, but it's generally the players that you play on the same team with. So I've been lucky to play alongside Meg Lanning, Elise Villani, people like that. You know, you get to know them by playing on the same team, because you don't really have a choice, especially when they are captain. So, but yeah, I've literally never spoken more than two words to Rachel in my life. So it was really good to meet her today properly and actually get to see a different side to her, because she's just as mental as me on the pitch, but actually off it, she's soft as a brush. So it's quite nice.
I wonder if you think one of the biggest pluses of the 100, I know there's opposition out there, but it seems to me for the women's game, am I right in thinking it's huge for the women's game, that might be one of the sort of big beneficiaries?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I think that this is one of the best tournaments in terms of a stepping stone for a youngster coming through, because they can't hide at all. They will be on show, and that means that everybody that needs to see them will see them. Whereas sometimes you can go from just one scout's opinion of one or two games, which just isn't, you know, it's not the best thing to do. So you're getting to watch a certain player 8 games in a row, and you've got footage, and you can go through this footage. You can see how they'll go about their business and how they cope with things, and like, it's just really great for stuff like that. The amount of exposure for that player is huge, and it's just about taking your opportunity into it. And that's like, the men have a lot of platforms for that type of thing, but this, especially for the women, this is, you know, huge for that level of it. And then internationally, like the Kiwi players, for instance, they could play, a lot of the girls go around the world playing, I don't know, Big Bash, our Kia Super League, or now the 100, the IPL, the women's, you know, the small version of the IPL. They go around playing these tournaments because they earn more money doing that than they do playing for their country full time, and not by a small way, by a long way. So it is really important for us to have these platforms for girls to have around the world, to have a career and have, you know, some stability and a means to grow. So that's why you will be seeing the best players from around the world coming and playing in these tournaments on a regular basis now, because of that reason.
What about the financial side of it? I've looked at we saw the figures the other day in terms of the amount women are being paid and the amount the men are going to be paid. Are you expecting over time that women will be paid much more?
Yeah, I am actually, because like you said, we're playing at the same venues on the same day. So I imagine the crowds will watch both the games and stay and things like that. And then we're all under the same banner. We all do the same training. We all play the same amount of games in the same amount of time for the same amount of effort. So why not? If this was a standalone game and we got 20 people in the crowd, then it's like, oh, fair enough. Yeah, like, we don't bring in any money. But I think with this tournament and the way it's been done, we are kind of on an equal playing field in terms of that. In my opinion, the gap should be a hell of a lot smaller. The reason for that gap, in my opinion, isn't good enough. That's just me. I'm 36 and I tend to speak out at my age because I've been through it all and, you know, been there, done that, and like to see things move on quicker, because there's no reason it can't. But yes, I definitely would like to see that. And I think it will happen very quickly.
Have you played on many of the northern grounds much? Because funnily enough, Kate Cross has just written a piece for the Cricketer Mag, which is coming out in a couple of days' time, saying that there'd be no women's internationals, or very few women's internationals, at Headingley or Old Trafford, or I think Durham. I seem to remember there was one. But anyway, she was sort of saying that the northern half of the country hasn't really captured or bought into the women's game, it's certainly at this level, international stroke, the 100 level, as much as it will do in this competition. So there's a sort of opportunity to
to spread the women's game further north in a way and get the kind of interest going.
Yeah, it's rubbish. It's rubbish, isn't it? Like, it infuriates me. In the last 20-something years that I've played for Yorkshire, only ever played for Yorkshire, Yorkshire through and through. I'm like proud as punch to be where I'm from and who I am. And the fact that I can walk into Headingley Stadium and not know anything to do with that club or its history is, you know, in my opinion, it's disgusting. It's rubbish. Like, that should just not happen. But it is, and it does, and it's 2021, and it's still happening. And I think in the last year, with the RHF Trophy, it's actually starting to happen. Like, we've just got our new kit with the Northern Diamonds, and the stuff is brilliant. Great kit, and we don't have to pay for it. It's like, whoa, we don't have to pay for my own kit. It's brilliant. If you look at the stats, I think, to do with where people are from in terms of female cricket participation, they're not from the north. And there's no one coming through. And that's because they've got nothing to aspire to locally. Because we don't play any cricket there, they can't beg their parents to take them to a game. Like, my family don't even come watch me play because I barely play further north than Worcester. The furthest they'll go is Worcester. And if I don't play there, I can just kiss goodbye any support. So, yeah, amazing, I'm always confident in here. It's terrible. It's terrible because there's some brilliant venues. I've played at Durham once in 17 years, and I've played at Headingley for England, I think, once, probably maximum twice for England. So it's beyond me. I don't understand it. I'd like to know the actual reasons and not the, I'm trying not to swear, as to why. It would be lovely to know. And for people to be held accountable, that would be nice too. I've played an international game of cricket at Shaw Lane, my home club in Barnsley. That's mental. That is mental. But I made it happen. I don't know how I made it happen.
Well, your club will be pleased, I suppose.
Yeah, they were. That was back in 2008 against New Zealand. It's actually, if you think about it and look back at it, it's actually ridiculous.
So there's some quite strong views there from Catherine Brunt, actually, which, I mean, is not surprising because she's a very passionate person. And that whole thing about the fact that the northern grounds and, to a lesser extent, counties haven't really massively supported the women's game is interesting. It's actually something that Kate Cross has also written about in the Cricketer magazine, which I mentioned in that interview. That's worth reading. The Cricketer magazine out this week, by the way, the new issue with a preview of the 100, but also a big preview of the Indian Test Series as well, and obviously many other features. And you can get to that by going to www.thecricketer.com/subscribe. Catherine seems quite enthused and quite excited by the 100 overall, I'd say.
Yeah, I hadn't realised that. I mean, it's great to learn new things. I hadn't realised how little cricket, international cricket, the England women's team has played in the north. I mean, it is a really good point, isn't it? How can you sort of sell the game and draw young girls in to cricket if they're not actually seeing the England team play? I mean, it's about selling the game. And the other thing, of course, is pay. Women's pay for the 100, that has been in the news in the last day or two, because a lot of the Australians are not coming, and they were very well paid, and there was a feeling that some of that money should go to some of the other players who are playing in the 100, in the women's 100, because they are not particularly well paid. It's something like £3,000 to £15,000 is the pay band, and then for the men it's around the sort of £20,000 to up to £120,000, the top men's players getting paid £120,000. Anyway, well, that is interesting. I think I agree with Catherine. I think over time that pay gap will, I mean, I think there'll be pressure on it to narrow, actually. But it's a great opportunity for the women's game to be on show, isn't it? And also, I think it was really interesting what she was saying there about the scrutiny, the spotlight, because they're not that well prepared for it. And you will have players playing on live television, which, you know, does it, some people rise to it, and some people find that quite intimidating. So anyway, it's a great opportunity, it seems to me, for the women's game to have that spotlight. They've not had that before.
Yeah, and to play on. Yeah, I agree. And to play on the proper test grounds as well, the big grounds with potentially big crowds, great pitches as well, which is something that's really hampered the women's game in the past, is playing on sort of ropey club pitches at times. They do get the chance to play at places like Taunton and Chelmsford, where the pitches are much better, Bristol. But, you know, some of those other grounds that have belting pitches like Trent Bridge, somewhere like that, fantastic place to play one-day cricket, they haven't had much opportunity at. So it really is, I think it's a pivotal moment for the women's game. In a way, 2017, the World Cup final at Lord's was won, and this is a second in this country. You know, and I've just seen so many more women and girls interested in the game, you know, school playing fields covered in girls playing the game now, which I just never saw 5 years ago. And this is another opportunity to really present the game in an exciting way to them. So, and on an equal footing, as you say. So I think it is a really exciting moment for the women's game. I'm not surprised that Catherine Brund is very enthused about it.
Well, we've talked about some of the issues around the 100, some of the pros and the antis, the arguments for and against. I suppose what we should also talk about is how it will look and how is the game going to be played? Is it going to be that much different from T20? We do have these blocks of 5 or 10 overs from one end, and one bowler can bowl all 10 balls. And Catherine Brunt saying, well, it's very hot at the moment, I don't fancy bowling balls number 8, 9 and 10. Yeah, they could be lining me up by then. But of course, if you've got a spinner, a decent spinner, who's really weaving a magic web around a batter, then, you know, that could actually be torture, couldn't it? The bowler could be winning there, really getting into the batter's mind. So they, you know, you might see a spinner bowl all 10 balls. You might see no one bowl all 10 balls. We don't quite know how it's going to turn out. How different do you think the game is going to look from T20?
Not that much different. I think one thing we will see, I think, is a bit more speed between overs and between balls. I think there'll be a bit more urgency. And that was the whole idea of T20 in the first place, was to get the game over in 3 hours. And it's now, you know, as we know, sort of elapsing into sometimes nearly 4 hours. And fielders and captains taking their time to set the field and get their people in exactly the right position. And that's been one of the delays. And funnily enough, I was noticing, even in one of those T20s against Pakistan, Owen Morgan is really almost slowing the game down more at critical moments, to just get the bowler, you know, composed and not rushing into the next delivery, just holding the ball up before giving it to him, and, you know, just really, really going through the plans. And that's the trouble. The higher the stakes, the more the players are going to take their time. But there's no scope for doing it in this competition, because they have to finish, you know, by around about 9 o'clock from a 6:30 start. And if they don't, if they're overruns, they lose, or ball rate, we should say, overruns, then they lose a fielder. And I think that's a great idea. I mean, I suggested that years ago, instead of overrate fines or penalty runs or something, just to take a fielder off. And my God, if you're a bowler.
I don't think they're taking a fielder off, Yoz. I think it's about the number of fielders you're allowed outside the circle.
Outside the circle. Well, yeah, that's effectively the same thing. In fact, when I say take a fielder off, I mean take a fielder away from the boundary. Mm. So, you know, moving him into the circle or something. I mean, that, I think, is a great idea, because it suddenly creates more boundary options for the batsman. And we've seen, actually, that often with 50-over cricket, that because you can only have 4 boundary fielders between overs 10 and 40, that's when some of these teams just really start accelerating. If you've only got 4 boundary fielders, it makes it so tough with the batsmen with their modern repertoires. So that's one thing that will be quite interesting, to see whether that encourages teams to be more urgent on the field. And I hope it does.
Mm. Well, I think it will do, because it's quite a big punishment, isn't it? If you haven't got that extra boundary rider out, as you're right, I mean, you could cost you the game. So I think there'll have to be more urgency. I mean, I think there needs to be more urgency in T20 as well. I mean, sometimes watching IPL matches, they're slower than tests, which is incredible, really. I mean, there's the great theatre, it's a great spectacle with all these top players playing, and, you know, when the crowds were allowed in, all the crowd fervour as well. But it does feel really, really slow. I've really noticed it. It's so obvious now. So that will be something about the 100 that, as you rightly say. What's going to be a what's going to be a decent score? It's going to be roughly the same, because you've got what, 20 fewer balls, but you're still going to get scores of 200, aren't you, occasionally?
Yeah. I think you are. Two a ball. Yeah, why not? I mean, you're getting 220 in T20, aren't you? So why not get 200 in 100 balls? Teams can take a bit more risk because they know they've still got the 10 wickets and less balls to use them up in. So I think there are going to be some high scores, maybe influenced by a team overrunning and therefore losing a boundary fielder. I'm just interested to see actually how it's presented in the stadiums, because and how the crowd respond to it, because I think one of the drawbacks of T20 is it's become a bit of, I mean, lots of people have said this, it's become a bit of a beer fest or a wine fest or whatever. And you get a lot of people at the bigger T20 games not really watching the game that much, actually there to be with their friends and have a nice social time and occasionally pay attention to the game. And there's a reason for that. And that is, I think, because the game is quite far away. And the sounds of the game, which you pick up very clearly on TV, you don't really pick up quite so well when you're in the stadium. So I hope they amplify the sound of the game, the bat on the ball, you know, the LBW shouts, you know, etc., the excitement of the players. I hope that is relayed a bit better in the stadium, because that will draw people in. Obviously, there'll be music and there'll be, you know, fireworks and the flares going off and all that, which is part of the sort of T20 entertainment. But I think they should also make sure the game itself is well covered and the replays are clear and things like that, so people can get involved in the game without necessarily knowing that much about cricket.
So basically, we've got 16 teams, not exactly thrown together, because they've had analysts looking at the players they wanted and all that sort of stuff, you know, everything that goes into white ball cricket these days, where everything is weighed, measured, assessed. So they haven't just been thrown together. But you've got teammates playing with people they've never met before. And Catherine Brunt was saying that earlier, you know, a few players, you know, who are you, when she turned up for the Trent Rockets training date on Monday. So we don't really, I mean, who are favourites to win? Not really sure at this stage. We'll see how it develops. Chris Jordan is in a team that looks strong, though, the Southern Braves. And he told us in the Virtual Cricket Club on Monday night how he believes you have to play to win the 100.
At the end of the day, everyone's starting on the same level playing field. No one's played it before. There probably will be some new tactics used and what's not, but who's to say one tactic's right and the other one isn't? But because no one's played the format before, you know, so it'll take some time before, like, you start to see certain patterns start to shape and stuff. The team that sort of believes in how they saw it and how they see it from the beginning, I think we'll probably go the furthest. Obviously, during the tournament, you have to make adjustments and what's not. But because there's no right or wrong way right now, the team that has the most belief in their own planning and their own the way they sort of see the games unfolding and stuff, and almost like back that 150%, I feel like those kind of teams will go quite deep.
Well, I think yours is certainly one of the favourites. Looking at that bowling attack, it's going to be trial by pace for the opposition. Very impressive list of fast bowlers. Hopefully, Jofra can play a bit of a part, and Devon Conway, good signing. Who are you looking forward to playing with that you haven't sort of experienced before?
I'm actually looking forward to being on the same side as Quinton de Kock.
Yes.
Honestly, he's an awesome player, like so talented. He gives us, he actually gives us quite a few headaches whenever we play against him, because he hits the ball in some unorthodox areas, you know.
He hits good, he hits hard length, over six, doesn't he?
Yeah, over fine leg and stuff like that. So, like, he is really a quality player and such a talented guy. Yeah, obviously, met him quite a bit in passing. We sit and speak a little bit and stuff. But to play with him, I'm looking forward to see what that's like. I'm definitely looking forward to playing with a few of the Sussex guys as well. Joff, George Garton, Tamal Mills, obviously Delroy Rawlings as well. Briggsy's back. So yeah, I think straight off the bat on paper, we do have a good group of guys, and not just obviously as cricketers, but actually as human beings as well. So, and I think that obviously once we come together, we start to get that team chemistry going quite quickly. I think it'll help that actually quite a few of us have played with one another already, all over, whether it be in franchise stuff or for your companies or for your country, you know. And also played against all of them as well, like Colin Negronom and Devon Combe, and as I said, Quinton Lipcock as well. So I think that the guys should gel pretty quickly and get that team chemistry going, because that's very, very important, especially in franchise cricket, to get that going as quickly as possible more than anything. And sort of on-field matters take care of themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good question, a point actually, because the on-field chemistry, I noticed Gary Kirsten with Welsh Fire is taking the team round, or has taken the team round the Principality Stadium and up to the Brecon Beacons and tried to get them sort of immersed in Wales to try and create that sort of team chemistry. And you know, you've played in quite a bit of franchise cricket around the place. What is the best way of creating that team spirit of a new team? Is it just a matter of winning, or are there kind of other good techniques that you can use?
I think winning is a big part to play in it, but it's not the be-all and end-all. But I think getting an early win under your belt is probably one of the better scenarios, just due to the fact that, look, it's new coaches, it's new teammates, it's new everything. And in that build-up, there will be a lot of messages, a lot of ideas and stuff. To see them sort of put into practice quite early in the tournament and work, it goes a long way to when you get deep into the tournament, because that trust builds actually pretty quickly that, right, the planning that we did, the things that we spoke about actually worked. So in addition to that, obviously it's very, very important that the players themselves are not too closed off, because it will be quite easy sometimes to be in your comfort zone but actually being out of your comfort zone, trying to get to know a teammate that you don't know so well a little bit better in an informal environment, stuff like that. Those type of things go a long way towards producing team chemistry, because then you can start to care a little bit more, especially and enjoy your teammate's success genuinely from a lot earlier. So those type of things, I think it's a combination of the two.
And you've got Mahela Jayawardena as your coach, who has a great record in the IPL, of course. What does he bring, and have you worked with him?
I've played with him and worked with him, yeah. So I played with him at Sussex, I played against him on my test debut, these kind of things. And he's and first and foremost, MJ's a top guy. He's quite compassionate, understanding, shows a lot of empathy as well. But also demands pretty high standards from his players, which I think is quite a good balance to have. So much experience, played so much test cricket, one day cricket for Sri Lanka. And then even as a coach, having been at the IPL, to win that trophy, no one ever goes through a whole IPL season and it's plain sailing. You know, sometimes they're difficult decisions to make mid-season, rejigging to be done, or whatever the case may be, and to come out on top in the end obviously shows good patience, shows good backing, but also shows that intelligence and that nous to know when things need rejigging and when things just need shuffling around to then go again and stuff like that.
Overall, I mean, you sound excited by it because it's new and interesting, I suppose, and challenging.
Yeah, 100%. The things that I'm most excited about is just to see how tactics and stuff unfold, you know, like that side of the game I'm really into. And then also to see, obviously, all of our cricketers, like, obviously perform on that stage again. It's on the BBC, so it'll be expanded to a whole new audience as well. So all these things sort of roll into one, make for good ingredients and excitement.
will you volunteer a 10 ball death over?
I'll do whatever is required. to be honest. Like, who knows? It could be, it could work for you, it could work against you, but that, and that's just the way like these shorter formats go. I played like T10 cricket as well. It's just about managing your expectations and assessing what is a good day from what is a bad day. And that will vary from surface to surface, conditions to conditions, and just how the game's unfolding at the time. So, but if I need to bowl a 10 ball depth over, and that's what the team needs me to do,
One last question, really. The 100, what do you think will represent success as a tournament?
That's a great question.
I mean, you know, is it massive audiences? Is it is it diverse audiences? Is it younger? You know,
I was about to exactly go down that line, because I think that with the players that are in it, I think the standard of cricket would be awesome anyway. So I wasn't even going to speak on that. I was more going to speak on, yeah, the audience and people seeing so many different people from different backgrounds actually playing this sport. Again, as I said, like, it's on free-to-air TV, so you're probably going to straight away in a snapshot start to see a slightly different audience. You might see a next world beater who would have watched the 100 and thought, that's a sport for me, I definitely want to play that. And I think those type of scenarios is what will represent success for me in this tournament.
Two or three in your team are from, you know, the Caribbean connection. Do you regard yourselves as sort of role models, symbols for that community to try and re-engage them?
I definitely see it that way, because I always think, and that's why I try to, it doesn't matter what level of cricket I'm playing, because I'm always of the opinion that you never know who's watching. Like, say, for instance, there might be a kid that I've never met, never heard of, but he looks at me on TV and thinks that he wants to do the things I'm doing. He wants to be like me someday. So that's why I just try to give a decent account of myself. And no matter what level of cricket, it can be club cricket, it can be international cricket, try to keep that level consistent. And if it is even just one kid, two kids, how many of it doesn't have to be a big number, but if they look and see me on TV doing what I love and performing and think for that reason alone, they want to do the same, I'm more than happy with that.
Well, that's Chris Jordan. Clearly, the ECB want to draw a new audience into the game, and Chris Jordan clearly sees his role in that and the importance of his role in that. I was interested to hear him talk about De Kock there, saying, yeah, it's nice to play with him after being pummeled by him for so many years. I suppose the other thing as well, you play with someone like that, you start to see perhaps their weaknesses in the dressing room, the way they talk in the dressing room as well, you know, some of the doubts that creep in. So I don't know whether that'll play out in future international matches. Do you know what I mean by that? That if
Definitely. You lose the fear factor as well.
Exactly.
You know, you can be intimidated by players that you only come across on the international circuit, but then suddenly when you're in the same dressing room as them, you do see their foibles and failings and fears, I suppose. So definitely it's an advantage.
I suppose we should end, Yoz, by asking the question we've asked it a couple of times during the interviews, actually, with Catherine and Chris, is what does success look like for the 100? How can we measure it? I know that Tom Harrison has said, well, it's a success already in the sense that they sold a very big TV rights deal and brought a lot of money into the game, which the game obviously needs. All games, all sports need money these days. It's an expensive business. What does, in your view, what does success look like for the 100?
I don't think it's going to be something that's instantly visible. But I think, firstly, the most important thing is that it's authentic. It has to be proper cricket that's played by, you know, the top players, and they care about it. So as long as the games are competitive and the standard of cricket is really high and doesn't get overtaken by the entertainment, you know, so it becomes a sort of glorified benefit match, as long as you can really see the passion that the players like the Catherine Brunts and Chris Jordans and all those other people normally display when they're playing international cricket. If you see that and you see the real contest going on, that's the first thing. That will then translate it to the audience, both on telly and also in the grounds. Obviously, to see foolish grounds is going to help, and that people want to be part of a full ground and an event and an exciting kind of sounding competition, don't they? So I think definitely if the crowds are good, that will encourage more people to go, and that'll just enhance the atmosphere. So it could be a sort of cumulative thing. But what you want in the end is good matches without sort of rather a one-sided sequence of games, and the result is obvious long before the end. I think you want players to look excited, and ultimately, in a year or two's time, what you want is the broadcasters to pay the same amount or more to have it again, to show it again. You want competition from broadcasters and sponsors to be involved. That will be the true measure of competition. But in the interim, it'll be about the standard of cricket, the competitiveness of the games, and the enthusiasm of the crowds.
Yeah. One thing I looked at when I was looking at the structure of the competition, there are 8 teams and they play 8 matches. So you play everyone else once and the team closest to you twice. So the two London teams, for example, play each other twice. One thing, I'm just trying to project ahead, one thing that could happen is that when you possibly you get towards the closing games of the season and it's obvious who are going to be in the top 3 positions, the winners, the team that finished top go through to the final, then 2 and 3 play off against each other in an eliminator, sort of a semi-final, and the winners of that play in the final. I wonder how many dead games you might have, and what's happened, of course, in other competitions. I mean, the Big Bash, for example, 5 teams go through, 5 teams have a chance of qualifying. Okay, it's much harder for them to go on and win the competition, but what it does is it means it's very hard to have meaningless matches. So it's quite contrived. So you can argue that in a way that it's so contrived that it doesn't really work. I don't know, but anyway, that's a possibility. I think it's probably got to look good on TV as well, hasn't it? You're right. If you have a ground where there are lots of empty seats, if you think, well, why am I watching this? And if no one's bothered to go along, why am I watching this? I suppose is one aspect to that. How many tickets have been sold and how many tickets have been given away? But if you do give them away, who are you giving them to? So if you're giving them to youngsters, then that means that you're bringing people into the ground, and if they like what they see, then they'll come again. So there's all those all those issues,
and the makeup of the audience as well. Actually, just the size of it, but not. And I don't just mean that it gets the South Asians and various Caribbean ethnicities, African ethnicities to be involved. I don't just mean that. I mean actually women as well as men. I mean, the really interesting thing about the IPL is that now nearly 50% of the audience, both in the ground and also on telly, are female. And, for years, really, cricket has been a very male-dominated sport in terms of how it's played, who plays it, and who watches it. And that's ridiculous because, it's just as great a sport for girls and women as it is for men, and to watch it as much as to play it. So if that can be something that the 100 achieves, women just a little bit alienated at times, I think, by certain T20 venues because they're quite sort of laddish. And hopefully we can sort of get the more family kind of environment, which was very much the feature of the World Cup final in 2017, the Women's World Cup final. If we can get that a bit more as well, I think that'd be great for the game.
Mm. Well, there are going to be alcohol-free areas, alcohol-free stands. Whether that, that's family orientated, I presume. Although there'll be people, who go along with their kids who might actually want to have a drink as well. I don't know, but the stress of looking after a group of kids. Anyway, what about failure? Sort of success looks like if it's lukewarm. If there's a lukewarm reaction from spectators, viewing figures. The other thing as well, this year is going to, presumably because of COVID, is going to be a bit different to future years because some of the top players are not here. I mean, that is a bit of a shame.
And there could be some COVID issues, with teams or games being called off as well. I mean, yeah. I've already been aware of the fact that there's red alert for COVID protocols amongst the teams, which are stricter than around the counties. And that's important because you can't have teams suddenly sort of defaulting, can you? Because that really does. If you've got a game every night and then suddenly there isn't one, it's going to really undermine it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. That is an issue, certainly for this year. But it's here, Yoz. It's been talked about for so long. It's been criticised for so long. People have put forward positive case for it for so long. It's about to start, and then people can actually judge it for what it is and for what it isn't. I don't have any skin in the game at all. I'm not working on it. I'd just be interested to see what happens, to see what works, what doesn't work, and to see whether overall it works or not. And of course, you know, what effect it has on other aspects of cricket and those who follow it in this country. Anyway, it's watch this space. Let's see what happens. I don't have all the answers. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't necessarily know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
No, well, I just think innovation. I think innovation is a good thing. I think you've got to always innovate to try and move forward. And it could be seen as a risk, but I think overall, I think it's. Well, I'm excited by it, and we'll be back in a week's time to review the first week of this tournament, as well as previewing, of course, the England-India Test series, which is sort of almost banking up right against the 100. In fact, there'll be dueling for notoriety and you know, eyeballs. But in a way, it might work well. The Test series ends, or the Test match day ends, just as a 100 match begins. So there's a festival of cricket happening from Wednesday onwards, and we'll do our best to keep you abreast of it all.
We will indeed. Thanks very much for listening. I hope we haven't offended too many people. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.